Blog Talk Radio. We are not alone. And a very, very wonderful vernal equinox evening to everyone out there this evening. And once again, you are tuned into Contact. I'm your host, Leslie Mitchell-Clark, and I am joined, as always, by Wes Roberts. Good evening, Wes. How are you doing?
I'm good, Leslie. Very good.
Excellent, excellent. Have you been enjoying the spring weather?
It's crazy. I just saw a guy in shorts.
Okay, excellent. So you're jogging without the thermal...
Absolutely.
Okay, that's good to know. Well, we are absolutely delighted this evening because in our continuing presentation of the featured speakers that are going to be appearing at Alien Cosmic Expo, which is happening June 26th, 27th, and 28th in Brantford, Ontario, we are welcoming to our show this evening for the first time. I don't know how that happened. I don't know why he hasn't been on the show before, but we're going to remedy that. Mr. Victor Vigiani is with us this evening. And many of you are familiar with Victor's work. He has a long, prestigious history in ufology and beyond. Victor Vigiani is currently the news director of Zealand Communications, which is an international news service. And his study of anomalous aerial phenomena, research and analysis of extraterrestrial issues spans over three decades. And his experience involves not only UFO sightings and report investigation, but also academic and radio journalism with a primary focus on UFO and extraterrestrial government disclosure. And those of you who are in the know will remember that Victor has addressed the media and audiences in both Sydney and Brisbane, Australia, Washington, D.C., and in Washington, D.C. at the National Press Club, on the CBC and CTV Toronto Television, various news programs. And also Victor is the co-host alongside our friend Richard Syrett. And I believe it's called The Conspiracy Show. Actually, he's also co-hosting with Richard Syrett on the radio version, which is called The Richard Syrett Show, which is on, of course, AM 740. We love AM 740.
We do, and we'll love it more in the future.
Indeed. Anyway, it is our great pleasure to welcome Victor. Before we bring him on, I did just want to give a very brief thank you to our sponsors, because without our fabulous sponsors, there would be no Contact Radio. We're in our fifth wonderful year, so thank you, first of all, to Euphoria and Euphoria Chronicles, Mr. James Borg. We would also like to thank Conspiracy Culture and our friend Patrick White. Conspiracy Culture is an amazing bookstore and resource center and really community center for information. We would also like to thank Enchanted Reveries Jewelry, beautiful handmade jewelry made with natural elements, and you can look at those wonderful objects at enchantedreveries.etsy.com. And we, of course, would also like to thank the Village Productions.
Oh, Variety Store.
Variety Store Productions. Oh, what's wrong with me?
Variety Store Productions.
Forgive me. And our friend Greg Summer. Yep. I had a senior moment there. Sorry about that. Little Jazzheimers. Anyway, so we thank Greg Summer and Variety Store Productions, and also we would like to thank Joanne Eady and Heather Masters and Les Such of the Alien Cosmic Expo. And there are still tickets available, folys. They're going fast, like hotcakes on Good Friday, so you better get on over there. It's www.aliencosmicexpo.com. And without further ado, it is my great pleasure to welcome to Contact Mr. Victor Vigiani. Victor, how are you?
Just fine, Leslie, and it's great to be on the program. Hi, Wes, how you doing?
Very well, Victor. Nice to hear you again.
I'm actually astonished that we have not had you on the show previously, but for whatever reason that occurred, I hope you will grace us with your presence in the future, particularly as the developments from your various disclosure projects begin to have fruition, which I have no doubt that they will. So, Victor, now tell us a little bit about some of the more recent things that you've been up to, because there's some very exciting stuff going on right now.
Well, yeah, there really is. There's a lot going on that we're trying to. It's like trying to herd cats. There's just so much happening, and everything is going in all different directions. And the number of synchronicities that have happened over the past, I'd say, month and a half, with all kinds of different things, it just seems like there's just so many irons in the fire, and they're all heating up at once. But no, there is a lot happening both here in the States, in Mexico. And throughout the world, actually, it just seems to be a new level of consciousness about all this information, whatever that is. We can get into a little bit of it later on. But it's boiling over. And I do several interviews with a very good friend of mine, Barry Eaton. He's in Brisbane. Yeah. And we do a program very similar to this. And we have sort of an ongoing relationship in terms of when this thing called disclosure is going to happen. And each time we talk, it's just a little bit more towards the edge. And he recognizes that, too, because he sees it from afar, from there, from his vantage point in Australia. And he can see the difference in the change. And he's not necessarily a disclosure aficionado or expert. But just by looking at what's happening here in North America and throughout the world, he can really see a difference, not only in what's going on, but the kinds of individuals that are becoming more and more closely associated with the phenomenon of whatever, off-world civilizations or whatever you want to call them. So that's what we try to do at Zealand Communications. If people want to find out more about that, I encourage them to go to our website. All they have to do is just Google Zealand, Z-L-A-N-D, Communications, and they'll get right to our website. And we are the only Canadian news outlet that deals with the UFO ET engagement issue on a political level. We don't do too much of citing reports or anything like that, or we stay focused on disclosure and how we can bring about an awareness among the general public, not the choir. We don't really speak to the choir that often. They know what they're doing, and they have their own directions, but we want to inform the general public about what's going on, not only in the halls of government, but whatever those things are that are frequenting our skies, and we're just trying to figure out who and what they might be and what it's all about.
Indeed, and what a marvelous focus and calling, Victor, because the fact is, as you mentioned, awareness and is occurring globally at a phenomenal rate, and I'm very fascinated by the fact that you have this wonderful program that emanates out of Brisbane, because certainly Australia is not only very forward-thinking as far as ET contact, but we have, I know for our show, we have a tremendous amount of listeners there. The people in Australia seem to be particularly aware and open and conscious. I don't think it's my imagination. I think they really are like that.
Oh, you're absolutely right. They are at a level of awareness unparalleled beyond North America, and even in some ways with a level of awareness that I don't see here. So there's a certain something about that. I lived there for a year in 2003, and I got to know Barry among other people. And during my time there, I really got to know the people of Australia, because we traveled a lot from Brisbane down to Tasmania and across the areas to Uluru and all of that. So I got to know the people very, very well. And there's a mindset down there of real strict inquiry and meeting with the people that are involved in this issue down there. They don't fool around. They're yeah. very, very serious about their work. And it's really good to see, because that's the kind of thing that we need to impact the government in the way that we're attempting to, or the governments the way we're attempting
yes.
to.
Yes, indeed. You know, perhaps wouldn't it be a wonderful thing if for next year's Alien Cosmic Expo, if we could bring Barry over here?
Oh, he would love it. He could. He's a great speaker. He's a very wise man, a very gentle man, and very inquisitive.
Yeah.
But it's something that you might want to give some consideration to, because he is indeed a real strong force down there.
Indeed, and we absolutely will do that. We'll speak to the powers that be. We're already looking to next year, amazingly mm-hmm. enough. Now, tell me a little bit, Victor, about how you, with your educational background, and some of it rather left-brained, how mm-hmm. did you come to have this fascination or this interest in ufology?
Well, it's not really a long story. But it goes back a while. 1975, I guess, and it was the year that my daughter was born, Danita. I was at a bookstore, and I remember it vividly, like it was yesterday. I was at a Kohl's bookstore. I forget what plaza it was. In any case, and I was just browsing. I really didn't have anything on my mind. I was just browsing. And I saw a book on the shelf in the, then I don't think it was called New Age, but it was in a section that I didn't, you know, it was something ethereal, let's put it that way. And it was a book by Jacques Vallée called Revelations. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I picked it up and I just sort of paged through it. And I'm not sure what page I landed up on, but I was just looking. And he started to give his take on what these things, this phenomena was. And I knew about, you know, technically speaking, UFOs or unidentified flying, I knew of that, but I really didn't have any specific interest at the time. And I read a bit more, and I was convinced I need to buy this book, so I bought the book. I read it four times, literally just stopped reading and started reading it again. I did that four straight times, twice in a row, and then as it would happen, we were going on vacation. I took it away on vacation with me and read it another two times on vacation. I tend to do that with those kinds of books. I read very, very little, if any, fiction, but I'll read anything to do on this subject, anything and everything. And his book really got me started on thinking about the whole topic itself, because as you may be aware, his approach to this topic is still very, very, how can I put it, non-materialistic. He has a very different perspective on what this phenomenon is, and I've sort of taken that lead through all of this. And from that, I began to become closely associated with organizations here in Canada, getting to find out what the whole, you know, landscape was here in Toronto. And from there, I joined a few groups and did a few sighting reports and just got to know the lay of the land. And then eventually I got involved in a radio program with Errol Bruce Knapp on CFRB in Toronto, Strange Days Indeed. And then that's when the whole flight path just sort of took a totally different direction, and Errol and I examined this thing from every possible way that we could. Mm-hmm. And then I guess the turning point was when I realized, and I realized it well after my experiences with MUFON, which was very difficult, I should say. I did not enjoy my time with that group because of their the approach that they took. And that's not a criticism of them. It just it didn't fit me. Right. In any case, so what I did was I discovered through a lot of other individuals that I became associated with through the program that there was a political aspect to this whole question that I never, ever even considered before. Yeah. And the politics of it were so deep, Leslie, that it literally overwhelmed me. And I think this is where, and I think Wes, you'll identify with this, there's something in my DNA, and I've talked about this with other people who are involved in the political pursuits that we're involved in. There's something in our DNA that we do not like or appreciate. As a matter of fact, we detest the fact that those in authority are lying to us. Yeah. They have assumed authority by our behest. They are there because we put them there. However, they've usurped that authority, and they have laid down a pathway of lies for humanity that goes back hundreds, if not thousands, of years.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, if you look at the whole aspect of what we're involved in, it's not just something that's 60 or 70 years old. Humanity itself has a history that's a matrix of lies and a matrix of misdirection and disinformation. And I guess that's really what gets to me the most in discovering that and making other people aware, not necessarily of the UFO issue or the ET issue, but the fact that we are being, in fact, lied to. And I don't want to couch the terms in any other term. There is no other word for it. We are being lied to, ipso facto. So in that general direction, that's how I got involved. And the politics of all of that has literally overwhelmed most of the organizations that I belong to and that I work with and work for. So that's kind of an overlay of the politics of the situation, rather than a good friend of mine, Stephen Bassett, who you probably both know.
Yes.
One of the phrases that we use is it's not about the lights in the sky, it's about the lies on the ground.
Yeah, absolutely. And and again, as you just said, it's the breach of faith. It is the mendacity. It is the needless suffering of individuals who are either experiencing illness or poverty, or it is a complete cold-hearted, selfish, material-driven, ego-based kind of mindset that has, and well, you know, as they say in the old Raymond Chandler novels, just follow the money.
That's right.
You know, yes. If we follow the money, it absolutely points to the. And I'm, you know, I'm not a big conspiracy theorist, but I'm a realist about human nature.
You're right.
And I don't think that human nature has changed a whole lot in many millennia. Now, whether we subscribe to the theory of that we were, you know, seeded or genetically upgraded. Mm-hmm. I don't think that matters, because we don't seem to need any assistance in being really terrible to each other. So, in a way,
we got that down pat.
So, when individuals say, well, why won't they come? Why won't, you know, the Pleiadians or the Arcturians, you know, land on the White House lawn and endow us with all of this endless technology? Well, you know, in some respects, our vibration just isn't really maybe high enough for a event of that sort. I do think there are benevolent beings and societies helping in every way that they can, if not only, but possibly on an etheric level and other interdimensional levels that we don't completely understand.
Yeah.
But it's up to us. We have to take responsibility. It's like when you're raising your kids. When they become 13 or 14, you have to sometimes use a little tough love to kickstart them into adult behavior. And it seems that that's kind of, you know, that's a lot about where we are now. But I see that there's a lot of self-examination, a lot of house cleaning, a lot of open-mindedness. And although the internet is probably, you know, a reflection of the kind of perhaps telepathic communication that other societies are using elsewhere, it's our training wheels. We were talking about this the other day, and you know, I know that your program out of Brisbane and our program and many, many other programs just like ours would not really exist on any kind of mainstream platform.
No, you're right. One of the points you made, Leslie, was the fact that you mentioned the word human nature, and being someone who was who's been steeped in the social sciences since my, you know, pre-graduate days, I would consider myself a social scientist and understanding human behavior, and also being a teacher. you can't be a teacher without understanding, for seeing hundreds and hundreds of children pass by you in the classroom, and as a teacher, and then as a principal in schools, you get to know human nature pretty well. Not that it's a prediction of what's going to happen, but you mentioned human nature, and I think what I'm witnessing now is there's some sort of I don't know what you'd call it, an evolutionary switch that's about to be flipped. And I think we are on the precipice, aside from all of the contact issues and you know, the political stuff, which is extremely important, and I realize that, and I will not, you know, cease my energies in that area. But I think that there is something going on consciously with us as a species. We are so dead set with what I call extinction behaviors.
Yeah.
And you can go down the list. You began the litany a few minutes ago, and you start with cyclical war, famine, poverty, the degradation of the environment, the amount of plastic in our oceans, which has just come forward in a tremendous article that I just read earlier. There's a bit of a cascade failure going on, and more people are beginning to recognize that and saying, what the heck is going on?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that what's happening is there's this, we are at the precipice of the next step in our evolution.
Yeah.
And in the recognition that there's something going on that's bigger than we are, or just as big. But the implications of it in terms of awareness and the capacity that awareness has to change the human society all in one fell swoop is so dominant, and it is so possible that the possibility just absolutely intrigues me, And it is something that we all need to work for. And you mentioned the number of podcasts and radio programs on this that are just spawning like salmon going up a river. It's just amazing the number of kinds of things on radio, television, the Ancient Alien series, and here UFO Declassified. I mean, they all have their drawbacks, and that we can criticize them far and wide for some of the positions they take. But the fact of the matter is, they are part of the scenario of enlightening people one way or another to this consciousness change, and that's bringing us to the precipice of what I consider the next step in our evolution.
I couldn't agree more. And as you said, you know, the program's Ancient Aliens, now in its 10th season, just beginning. You know, what we have now also with our, you know, available technology, ground-penetrating radar and other marvelous technology, we're also at the precipice, really, of understanding and embracing our ancient past, and perhaps a rediscovery of zero-point energy and other energy technologies that were at one time on this planet, whether you accept an extraterrestrial presence or not. The facts are clear that we had sophisticated technology. You know, the Bosnian pyramid is most likely over 60,000 years old. And it's still, and that pyramid of the sun, in that enclave or whatever you want to call it, is still sending out earth energy right out of its spout, as it were. So we are now in the position, and again, the alternative media, as you so clearly pointed out, is very, very open to covering these unique archaeological discoveries that are happening every day. And couple that with, you know, a lot of deathbed confessions. I should probably bring up, you know, what's going on with the Smithsonian recently, where one of their noted archaeologists who was about to pass confessed that the Smithsonian was in charge of incinerating a huge collection of giant skeletons because they did not fit into the prescribed timeline.
There's so much out there that's the dissonance, Leslie, that's out there in terms of the power structures that are emanating this energy of cognitive dissonance and making people feel that it is in some way intellectually morbid to believe in something like the stuff you're described that you're describing, that the general public has been convinced that is the way to think. I wrote an article about thou shalt not believe in UFOs, because and it starts with a statement that I found about after you leave school, you know, people should not leave school unless they've been properly inoculated. So they leave school so that, fine, you've left the doors of either high school or secondary school or whatever it might be, and you have been inoculated, you've been let loose into society to spew out the same kind of garbage that the last 300, 400, 500 years of history has taught us to spew out, and that's a very difficult thing to counteract. And as a matter of fact, I don't counteract it anymore. I don't even deal with it. I just launch myself forward with the truth in the hope that the truth will have such a sharp edge to it. It will pierce through all of that garbage and that dissonance. And we are definitely making inroads. There's absolutely no doubt that we are. And it's just a matter of time before this thing bursts forward on a global level to manifest itself as a reality. And there's just too many, there's too much ideology behind it for it to be denied on a public level eventually. So that gets us into the whole idea of politics and exoconsciousness and all of those things. So when you look at all of those forces that are moving forward, you know, on the internet, through the podcasts, through the exopolitical movement, through the stuff that Stephen Bassett is doing with the hearings that he did. I covered those hearings for 5 straight days, and I felt like I was on a beach with waves and waves and waves of information hitting me minute by minute. And it's just inexorable. I was apoplectic after it was finished. It's just like, how do I deal with all this information as one person? And then you get to the point where you say to yourself, well, you know, how do I impart that reality to a very, very naive and socially inept citizenry that have been inoculated against the truth, and that's part of our job, and we just move forward that way, and the success is in what we've seen in the past and how we move forward. So I see every reason to be optimistic about this. When it's going to happen, who the heck knows, but we are part of a process that's extremely important. And if we don't do it, Leslie, if we don't do it, humanity will be the less for it. It's something that they won't be able to deal with if for some reason the powers that be, quote unquote, win this battle over worldviews. We're going to be stuck in another 1,000 years of disinformation and whatever you want to call it. But yeah. I don't choose to look at it that way. I'm being very optimistic about the way we dispense this knowledge to the general public and the way we frame it. Leslie, I think it's one of the important parts about this is the way we frame this information in a logical, coherent, intelligent, rational way, so that media, the citizens of the world, people in Kentucky and Nineveh, my goodness, what is that all about? And so you present it to them in a palatable way that they at least dip their finger in the ink, and a little while later they look at their finger and there's a little ink spot there that they don't know what to do with, you know? And so it reminds them that there's something more that they need to find out about.
Yes. Now, as an educator, and this is a question also for Wes, and maybe you can both speak to this on some level. It's my feeling. I'm not an educator, but my boys are now 18 and 22, and I'm very close to a lot of their friends. These kids are quite special and quite different. They first of all, I think that they have come in with an intuitive understanding of technology.
Of everything. I share something with you. I have a 4-year-old. No, he just turned 5. I have a 5-year-old grandson. Okay, and my wife Lori has an iPad. Okay, and this little child was 3.5 years old, and he learned to play with the iPad, and go onto the iPad. It's a 3-year-old child.
Yeah.
And he actually ordered games on the internet when he was 3.5. I mean, I don't know how he found the password. This is a 3.5-year-old child, not even in junior kindergarten, not even there yet.
Yes.
So I completely agree with you. There is something going on with the children today that have some sort of intellectual, cognitive, conscious, whatever download of information from wherever it might be, and there's a gene that's acting that way.
Maybe a gene has been activated. Maybe there's souls whose time has come to enter in for this transition.
Course,
we don't know.
Why are we having a generation of children? And my wife sees them because she's an elementary school principal, and she has a large proportion of autistic and Asperger's children in her school. And she says, Victor, these children are incredible. They're not disabled. They're enabled.
Yes.
They're abled in ways that we just don't even perceive. So you're right. There's something going on.
There is something going on. And now, Wes, you tend to see people maybe a little bit older than that, but they're certainly of the new generation. They seem to be a little more, they seem to not be restricted with any odd ideas of patriotism. That's what I mean, and I'm not I am pro-Canadian. I'm a Canadian citizen. But when I speak about toxic patriotism, I think you probably know what I'm talking about. Concepts that are about separation. What do you think about that, Wes? How do you see these young people that you interact with on a daily basis?
Well, I see a lot of what you both just mentioned. They step into my classes after going through the public school system. So I see college students. They're roughly between 18 and 22, although we have some mature students. Mm-hmm. And walking in the door, they possess a lot more than I ever did.
Mm-hmm.
And both of you brought up tonight the whole internet concept, and I was just jotting down some notes, which ties into this discussion, I think. The internet and technology takes its cues from real life. So real life gave people the idea to create the internet back in the 60s, roughly. Sir Tim Berners-Lee created the World Wide Web specifically in the early 90s. And now we're being brought face forward to the World Wide Web to try and understand what it is again in real life.
Yeah.
So we've come full circle to get an idea of what life is about from the internet, which came from real life.
Yes.
So it's really fascinating to look at the whole web concept and how things touch one another through the web.
Yes, and I kind of love the idea that the original concept, the original purpose of the World Wide Web was as a military construct in the U.S., and that we have managed to completely flip that on its ear and are now using that same tool, which I believe was really it's stolen from us in a sense, which is what's happened with most of the reverse engineered technology. It was, you know, parceled out to various mm-hmm. big technological arms, corporations, and then we have the military-industrial complex. So, Victor, one thing I did want to ask you now, with your overview of both the U.S. and Canada, do you feel that Canadian policy as far as ufology and disclosure is being dictated by the U.S.? I mean, you know, Stephen Harper's a little Bush wannabe, but is that, or do you feel that our own identity as uniquely Canadian, like the Australians are uniquely Australian, is going to be make us a major player in disclosure?
Do you have two more hours? No, you raise an excellent point, and I continue to not argue, but battle with Stephen Bassett about this idea about Canada and what it represents in the whole disclosure framework. The United States is locked into an empire mentality, and Stephen is up against a fortress that is larger than anyone could ever imagine in terms of secrecy and silence and mendacity, as you used that word earlier.
Yeah.
But Canada is different. Canada is much, much different. The media is different. The politics are different. It's like comparing the thickness of ice. You know,
yeah.
Canada is a small pond with ice covering secrecy that is, you know, 2 or 3 inches thick, or maybe 4 or 5 inches. The United States is an ocean, is a sea, of a frozen sea, that where the secrecy is probably a mile thick. So that, just in comparison, we have a lot to be thankful for here, because our media is a little bit more amorphous, mm-hmm. is a little bit more accountable. It's not great. There's no arguing that it is. But at least the battle is not as pervasive and as arduous as the one that any of the disclosure advocates are up against in the United States.
Yeah.
We here in Canada have a system where the media has the capacity to look at issues in a free-form way, and that's where I feel that this is going. In terms of politics, forget about the other stuff for a moment, and just in terms of politics, we have some real identifiable policy conduits through which we can go to get this issue to rise to the surface and have our elected officials understand it. And that's one of the things that we're doing at Zealand Communications, along with Edgar Mitchell, Paul Hellyer, and a whole lot of other people who have supported us in our letters to the government and to other factions within the government. So the whole idea of where will disclosure happen, as far as I'm concerned, I'm going to say this very selfishly, I think that we in Canada have the best opportunity to bring this information forward globally than any other country on the planet. And it's because we have a very sophisticated media, but in a lot of ways it's very naive. That's not the case in the United States or in many other countries. So from that perspective, you mentioned, you know, patriotism and all of that. I mean, you're right. I love Canada. Canada's has to be the greatest country in the world to live in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so many things that are just right with this place. It feels right, despite the fact that we have a prime minister whose mindset is that of a gnat.
Indeed.
You know, I don't.
On a good day.
On a good day, and I don't. I won't be criticized for saying that, and because that is in fact the truth.
Yes.
Because I've dealt with the man, and I've dealt with his office in ways that that most people have not. So I can see the kind of mendacity that he's involved in. But irrespective of that, the whole system is a lot more amorphous, and we have the possibility, the greater possibility, of getting into the government structure to at least have them look at the issue and discuss it in a rational way. Now, some people may say, well, you know, don't depend on the government to tell us anything. Well, you know what? I don't buy that argument. And that's because we're dealing with a citizenry that is intellectually ignorant of the facts. And if the government were to understand, or at least someone or the media were to get into the government to make the government admit that these things have happened, and if you take a look at the documents, this stuff has been going on in Canada since 1952. The documents are clear. There's 9,500 files. So if we can convince Canadians that our Canadian government has been lying to us, that's a much different story than Stephen Bassett trying to get the American media and the Congress to do the same thing. It's a much smaller job up here, but yet we have a global theater that we have access to here in Canada through the CBC and all of the other media outlets to break this thing forward and have the rest of the global community recognize what Canada is doing in terms of bringing this information forward and say, hey, look, you know what? We've been lied to, folks, and we can prove that to you in spades.
Absolutely. Well, I could not agree more with everything that you just have recounted to us. Just real briefly, we're about at the halfway point here of Contact this evening. I did want to mention to our listeners that this show this evening is pre-taped. Unfortunately, Victor Vigiani won't be able to take phone calls from you this evening, but we will we'll have him back real soon, and you'll be able to certainly contact Victor Vigiani. Victor, what is the most recent update now with Disclosure Canada, with the work and also with the team that you have assembled that you're interfacing with?
Well, I'll try to put it into a nutshell if I can. An organization and a very good friend of mine, Chris Ruschak, his associate, David Whitehead. We have been involved with Paul Hellyer for a while and helping Paul, get onto a speaking tour and do things in many, many different ways about the economic system as well as the extraterrestrial issue. So Paul has kind of folded all of that in. But what we have done is we have taken a page from our playbook as Z-Land Communications and our previous attempts to contact the previous Minister of Defense, Rob Nicholson, with documents that are in his domain. So we sort of leapt off on that issue. And what we've done is we've written a letter to the Honorable Minister of Defense, Jason Kenney, and we have outlined for him 9 different points of documented proof that the government of Canada has been involved since 1952, and perhaps earlier, but definitely 1952, and it's in their own archives. They have been involved in sequestering this information. They've been involved in dialoguing about this information. They've been involved in planning this information, and they've been involved in making reports to the Minister of Defense about this information since 1952, as well as NORAD. NORAD, the coterminous operation called NORAD, is an operation that Canada and the United States it's a joint venture between the two. And we have documentation from NORAD that unequivocally proves that over the last 5 years, 1,800 what they call unidentified tracks or unknown tracks or tracks of interest have been captured by NORAD, and a 5-year average of 75 intercepts. In other words, jets have been scrambled to go and chase these things, and we have documentation. I have an air traffic control report that says contact has been made at 35,000 feet by CF-18s of these anomalous objects. We're not talking meteors here. We're not talking about, you know, flocks of geese. We're talking about craft that are moving faster than these CF-18s and elude these CF-18s. So what are they? Why is that information being kept from us? And what other stuff can you tell us about why you've been hiding this information from the? And don't use the moniker or the veil of a national security. That's not going to work anymore. Okay, that's just not going to work anymore. So we want the truth. We're challenging Minister Kenney to come forward and explain this stuff not only to Parliament but to the Canadian citizens that he is serving and that he is the servant of. So we've got this documentation in spades, and we're presenting him with it. And without being confrontational, and that's not my approach, but there is a certain sense that when you are faced with the truth, you have to account to it. And I think the minister has to account for the truth of the matter, that the Canadian government has been involved in this stuff, and the documents prove it. So that's the best thing that we've been doing, and we're trying to put that forward through the Modern Knowledge Tour. And if people go to modernknowledge.ca, they will see all of the documentation that we have and the letter that we have sent to the Minister of Defense. So that was just sent the day before yesterday.
Yes.
And we do have confirmation that the Department of Defense did receive our letter. We are also sending the exact same letter to Justin Trudeau, the leader of the Liberal Party, mm-hmm. for your international and American listeners, to the leader of the New Democratic Party, Thomas Mulcair,
yes.
and to the leader of the Green Party, Elizabeth May. So they will have this exact information too, with the exhortation that they need to challenge the government on this on the floor. Listen to me now, on the floor of the House of Commons. We won't accept anything less. We want questions asked in question period of the Minister of Defense, what all this documentation really means and why it's been kept secret.
Yes. Wow. Now, Victor, do you feel that there has been reverse engineering of possibly crashed or otherwise rendered inactive craft? Have the Canadian, is there a Canadian military industrial complex that reflects what has happened in the U.S.?
As far as the back engineering, I'm not aware of anything that Canada has or has done. I know that there are questions about some underground facilities here in mm-hmm. Canada. I've run into that information, and I don't follow it that closely because it's not necessarily something that I in-depthly investigate, but I have run into information that there may be underground facilities here in Canada. What they are, how deep they are, and what they're used for, I really don't know. It's a difficult question. But in terms of back engineering or reverse engineering of craft, I don't think Canada has been involved in that. They may have been involved. You know, I have documents from that a very good friend of mine has supplied to me from Avro yes. that was developing, not the Avro car, but they were developing a saucer-shaped configuration that yes. could fly at Mach 3 or Mach 4 with multiple engines. And I have the configuration, I have the actual drawings for it. So where they got the idea from and what that whole document means, I think it was Project 57, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. But I have all of the documents because a very close friend of mine worked for Avro at the time, and he gave me these documents, and I've looked at them. And basically all it is a huge a prototype of a huge craft with about six or eight engines, regular engines, not any, you know, anti-gravitic things, or just engines, regular Rolls-Royce engines spewing out whatever that can move at Mach 3. So there has been some sort of back engineering or at least reproduction on the Canadians' part, but I don't think there's been anything in an anti-gravitic sense. Now, down in the States, in the United States, that's a totally different story.
Yeah.
We know, in fact, and I have seen, and I will tell you if you want, that I have actually seen one of these craft in operation over Area 51 in 1995 and 96.
Yes, I have no doubt. I have no doubt about that whatsoever. Victor, actually, Wes had a rather interesting question here for you.
Shoot.
Mm. Yeah, just sort of a comment as well, two comments now because of what you just said.
Mm.
One is that we're stuck in the brute force era still,
mm-hmm.
you know, absolutely on thrust. And the other one is, based on what you said about NORAD, there's an interception every 5 days.
That's right. Yeah.
It's incredible.
They have at least, well, I've got a document, Wes, that says there's one a day. At least one a day.
Yeah.
Oh,
and I've got it on my reading list. I can't pull it up right now, but I know that when Gordon Cooper was interviewed. And he said this multiple numbers of times, and he also said it at a committee meeting to the UN. I, off the top of my head, I forget the year, but he did meet with a group from the UN, and he said every day craft of unknown origin are cataloged by military defense systems in the United States. So it's not really a big surprise to me. Mm-hmm. And when you look at some of the really good and authentic, and we've had these things checked out from space, these things that come and go, these things change direction.
Yep.
They go up, they go down, they go across, and they're moving at actual blinding speed, and they're coming and going with impunity. That's the whole surprising thing is these things are coming and going and no one's bothered. What can the United States Air Force do with something in space? They don't have the capacity to do it, not that we know of anyways. But in any case, that's a bit of a moot point. But the fact of the matter is, when you say that, Wes, you are acknowledging the fact that a major organization, a major military organization in North America and globally, has information about this, and they're being so tight-fisted about it. And I've actually spoken to people at NORAD and at the United States Air Force. And, you go to their media website and you talk to some of the people on the media desk there. And some of these people, to be quite honest with you, they are more than open to the fact of talking about this stuff. They really are. That might surprise you, but
yes.
I have had a number of conversations with the lieutenants, sergeants on the desks of media. Well, yeah, this stuff happens, kind of, but we don't know what it is, but they won't go any further.
Yeah.
They won't pierce that glass ceiling of divulging exactly what they know. Essentially, they don't know much, but they know that something's going on, and they're willing to literally kind of quote unquote chat with me about it. And I've had a number of conversations with people who say, we know that.
Yeah.
What else is new, kind of thing. Now, on that level, off the record, I mean, goodness gracious, give your head a shake. These people in NORAD, man at the front desk, know this stuff. Why doesn't it filter up or down to the people who are in charge and to the media to understand that some of the minions at NORAD and the Department of Defense and all those other organizations, some of those minions know this stuff, very clearly know this stuff, but they bump their head against the glass ceiling and are not allowed to talk about it publicly.
Yeah. Well, it's not overly surprising, but it's something that has to stop and stop immediately.
It does, yeah, for sure.
It's enough already. And, as far as Victor, we're talking about the widespread, not only with NORAD, but the widespread amount of sightings and activity, not only here, but stuff people are seeing on the moon and blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly the abduction or encounter experience itself is probably far more widespread than what anyone would think, and this is sort of my area because a large part of my clientele as a clinical hypnotherapist are individuals who have had experiences. The latest figures say that over 14 million people in North America alone have reported encounters. Now that's bigger than the city of New York. So and the estimates are that there may be as much as a third of the people on the entire planet have had viable experiences. So this is enough already. To just say what's happening. In fact, did you happen to see speaking of Chris Rusek and David Whitehead? We had a little sighting when we were taping a little sequence for Modern Knowledge. Actually, I was interviewing Richard Dolan, who was saying that he'd never had a sighting or any sort of experience.
Right.
And we didn't see it at the time, but the cameraman happened to be focusing outside the window over our shoulder, and we had a clear craft, which zigzagged across the screen and then descended quickly into the lake, I believe.
Wow, there's so much entwined with what you've just said, and as Wes might know, early in our relationship, when Wes and I knew each other several years back, I guess, Wes.
Yes, MUFON days.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, my experience with experiencers has been very troubling. Okay.
Yes.
Very troubling. I've dealt with 16 different individuals, okay? Three of whom were children.
Yes.
Who've had experiences, and that's you know, and you know what that's like when you delve into that whole thing.
Indeed.
And with the really intense assistance of John Mack, Dr. John, the late John Mack,
yeah.
I was really struggling with this, Leslie and Wes.
Mm-hmm.
I ran into children at the school, two specific children, who shared experiences with me, and I can get into that if you wish, but I guess the point I'm trying to make is that John Mack helped me, I guess, divest my bias about this.
Yes.
And he allowed me to intervene with these people to say, just let them talk.
Yeah.
And I'm not a trained hypnotherapist. I have a counseling background, a very strong counseling background.
Yes.
That kind of thing really helped me to engage these individuals, to allow them to express the repressed feelings that they could not talk to or could not talk about with their family or with their coworkers or whatever. They were bound. They were literally tied up in this knot of information. So in talking with these individuals, and John was very very open with me, he said, just let them talk. Just relax them, get them to a position of trust, and allow them to talk. And the one thing that he told me that I will never ever forget, he said, if you do anything with these individuals, whatever kind of help you can give them, allow them to divest themselves of being a victim.
Yes.
Right. To take control of the situation.
Yes.
And reading his book, if you've read his book, Abductions and Passport, and if your reader, if your listeners want to read something of absolute power and thrust,
mm-hmm.
I mean, they need to read Abductions by John Mack,
yeah.
and they need to read Passport to the Cosmos to really understand the more subtle aspects of what's really going on. And it's all entwined with this so-called UFO-ET issue. In a lot of ways, the UFO-ET issue politically takes a back seat to this information. That's my gut feeling.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. At a political level, I'm working in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to let the level of consciousness and the power that kind of information possesses to move through the human species as it will. I have no control over that.
Yes.
It's gonna do its own thing no matter what I do, what you do, or what's it. It's gonna happen one way or another. That's in my estimation, it's predetermined.
Yes.
So let's just let it move through the species in that way, and let go of it in terms of trying to control it. So we have to allow these people, millions, as you just quoted, Leslie, to let those individuals have the effect that they can have on the rest of the population, and that they will have on the rest of the population, because they are they're the uncategorized, the unknown factor.
Yes.
in this whole equation.
Yes.
They
yes.
could be the ones to bring about this kind. You talk about that many people, Leslie. I don't know what your numbers are, and I'm not a stats person. But when you get that number of people being imbued with this kinds of information,
yes.
that's an unstoppable force, and it will be an unstoppable force once all of the other stuff perhaps come into play too. So we're talking about multiple fronts here. Okay,
absolutely,
we're not talking about one thing.
Multiple fronts and a great variety of experiences,
mm-hmm.
as well. And as you know, our dear friend Paul Hellyer, you know, reported, you know,
right.
even the government admits that there are 82 different species, and some of the experiences that people have are very physical. They're very much with beings that are in the third density as we are. And that kind of experience is one type of experience, but then again, there are also experiences that seem to be completely etheric or interdimensional, and they are no less valid. And what we do, or what I try to do in following in the footsteps of the great John Mack, who I certainly idolize and have developed some of my techniques based on his work, is we get people to take their power back, to release fear,
mm-hmm.
Because in a sense, you know, as a counselor, in a sense, it's really not even important to me on what level these experiences happened,
no,
whether
right.
it was
yeah.
physical or etheric or what have you. what is important is these people have passed through a certain type of trauma and are experiencing a very specific type of post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And that's kind of where we, you know, where I like to start from. But but listening, just let them,
I think you make a very, very good point, because as you were speaking, I was thinking that going back to the situation that my wife has at her school with these children that are autistic, mm-hmm. and Asperger's and all, and that whole syndrome. What I think is happening here is the misinterpretation of what we think autism is, or Down syndrome, or any mental pathology. We look at it as a pathology, and which in a certain sense, it's a very, very narrow perspective to look at the human mind. If you have any inclination of investigating what autism is and what it can do to the brain, it changes the composition of the brain.
Yeah.
And what I think experiencers have been through eventually will be recognized down the road as some sort of, I'm not going to use the word pathology because it's not a pathology, but it's going to be looked upon in the same way as autism is. There's going to be a group of people on this planet who've been imbued with a gift,
yes.
that everyone will recognize. Holy smoke, how did you know that?
Where
did that
come
from?
I could not agree more. And there are certain commonalities. Many of the people who experience mm-hmm. the abduction phenomena, they don't really sleep. They spend a lot of time in an altered state when they should be passing through their sleep stages.
Right.
They appear to almost lead double lives, in a
mm-hmm.
sense.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have to sit down and have a big chat about this. But I did want to mention, before we let you go, once again, we are talking to Mr. Victor Vigiani, who's going to be a featured speaker at the Alien Cosmic Expo happening in Brantford, Ontario, June 26th, 27th, 28th. Visit aliencosmicexpo.com. And certainly, Victor Vigiani, we want to make sure that you check his wonderful website, which is really a fantastic resource. And what would that be again? It's
Victor said to just Google Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
We'll find it. But do you want to give the whole website, Victor?
Well, actually, it's a very long, convoluted one. I just would say Google Zealand Communications, and you'll get there. It's number one on the list, because there's nobody called Zealand. And maybe at another time, I'll tell you the hidden story about why we call it Zealand.
Cool.
And it's all about a novel that I read by John Wyndham back in 1919.
Okay. All right. Well, we will definitely investigate that over a few drinks at Alien Cosmic Expo. I can well imagine. Now, you're headed off to Mexico. Yo me gusto Mexico. And you're going to be hanging out with our friend Jaime Musan. And I want to hear all about that when you get back. And that is a disclosure event, is it not?
Yes, in Mexico, I believe it's May the 4th or 5th. I've been talking to Tom Carey about this, and Tom and I will be talking more about how this event's going to pan out, because it could be something really, really special. They're convinced there's something there that's as bizarre as a day is long.
Yep, they're going to show you some really unique mm-hmm. evidence, from what I understand.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's time for us. I don't know where the hour went. Talk about plastic subjective time.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened there. But anyway, we want to thank you, Victor Vigiani, for taking the time in your busy schedule to chat with us. We do appreciate it so much. And we also want to thank you for the incredible work that you are doing towards disclosure, which is paramount to our survival as a species and as a society. So thank you so much from both of us.
Yes, yes. Thank you very much for being on the show. Ace is going to be ace.
Yep.
Yeah, it will be, for sure. It'll be the ace up the sleeve, for sure. Thank you very much for having me on the program. I've really enjoyed it. You do a great job, and keep on doing the good stuff, because you're doing great work, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Victor. Safe travels. And we'll touch base with you when you get back. And bye for now.
Bye now.
Okay. And that was Victor Vigiani, everybody. And we'd like to wish you also a very good night. We'll be back next Sunday evening live. This is Contact Radio. And remember, we are not alone.